Hello?
Sam Friedman, please.
This is he.
Sam, this is Leroy Chatfield. I'm the publisher of Syndic Literary Journal.
Right, and a wonderful journal.
Thank you very much. And this call is being recorded because we're doing an interview regarding the next issue, which is called Remembering 9/11.
Right.
And you have worked for many years in different parts of the World Trade Center before it was destroyed. And so I would be interested in knowing something about your commute and to the World Trade Center. I mean, after all, most of the employees, if not all of them, made a commute of some distance. And in terms of 9/11 itself, the first plane struck at 8:46 a.m. and the next one at 9:02 a.m. And it made a life or death difference between people who were arriving early in the morning to go to work. So I turn it over to you, and tell us about your situation and your commute and your 9/11 experience.
Okay. At one point in the 80s, I had working for the same organization I still work for. We had been on the 67th floor. But for reasons not worth going into, we left the Trade Center and came back, if I remember right, in 1996, where we were on the 16th floor of the South Tower, which is the one that was hit second. Now, my commute in general at about that time, I probably would have left home somewhere in the order of, I think, 7:15 to 7:30 in the morning. I would have walked a very nice walk of a mile between my home and the New Brunswick train station. I would then get on the train and ride it to Newark, where I would switch to the Port Authority system, which is a separate and independent transportation authority, which is a train system that goes under the river in different ways than the New Jersey Transit, which I would take to get to Newark. And on the path, I would have, if I remember right, a 25 to 30 minute ride into New York, going underground in Jersey City, and then going a couple more stops, and then going under the river and arriving in the basement of the World Trade Center at the World Trade Center stop. I would then get out of the train, go up a big escalator, walk maybe a quarter mile within the concourse to where the door would be to get into the World Trade Center. By 96, because of the fact that they'd had the bombing in 93, they had elaborate security precautions, which were really a nuisance whenever we'd have a visitor. But for us, we just had identification stuff. Then I would go up and get on the elevator and go up to the 16th floor, where our offices were, and walk over to my office, which was if I remember right next to the southwest corner. So I would get there somewhere probably between 9:15 and 9:30. So the total commute was something like an hour and a half to 2 hours, and it would vary. That's not, however, what I did on 9/11, because on that Tuesday morning, which was a beautiful Sunday, Tuesday, I had to get myself a blood test. So I went to the hospital, which is near the train station, to get my blood tests taken. and went there, went through their intake procedures for blood tests, went and got my blood tested, then walked down to the trade center, I mean to the train station, and probably got on the train about 8:48 or so. Sat on the train, probably read, I don't really remember. When we got to the Newark station, they announced that the path was shut down, but we had, essentially they would honor our tickets, honor us and give us a free ride to Penn Station. They said nothing about why the path was shut down. And so I just stayed on the train. And as you pull out of the Newark train station, you're going over the river there, and it goes up and then down. And as we started down, I looked over to the right, where in a normal clear day, I'd have a perfect view of the Trade Center from there. And noticed that the North Tower had a lot of smoke coming out of it and was on fire. And, that was pretty scary, and I was hoping people would get out because there might be smoke getting sucked into the ventilators at the Trade Center, in our tower. And as we went on further, a little bit, I suddenly noticed there was smoke coming out of the second tower, and it seemed to be burning. And somewhere around then, people who had radios on or cell phones or whatever, and I did not have either, started saying that airplanes had gone into the towers, and people started speculating and about what was happening and stuff like that. So we went across, further along and watched the towers burn, and were, obviously I was getting very worried about my coworkers. And then we go underground and go to Penn Station, where, my figure is my first duty is to get to a telephone and just in case there was anyone who wasn't aware of what was going on, and try to call to our switchboard and tell them to get out, because I had a good view and they might not. So I called and the phone just rang and rang and rang and nothing, no one answered. And I figured that was probably a good thing. And I called my house and for some reason was able to get through and said that I was coming home and I was okay. And walked over to, found the next train, got on it. For all I know, it was the last train out before they shut the train system down for a couple of days. And, sat on a chair, seat, looked around at the incredibly frantic eyes of everyone around me, and proceeded to write a poem about, what I was seeing. Now, I suppose I should probably read that poem, because I think, the people will like to hear it. It takes a little bit of an introduction. It's called 10:10 a.m., September 11, 2001, and that's approximately the time I literally wrote the poem, and it reflects on what I was seeing and thinking at that time. And it reflects my speculation that the destruction might have been done by forces organized by the government of Iraq because, we had been torturing that country at that point for 10 years. And I don't believe that a bit of that anymore. I mean, it's clear it wasn't. But that's what I was underlying some of this poem. So it's called 10:10 a.m., September 11th. 2001 by Sam Friedman. As my workplace burns, destroyed by a plane whose motivations I do not know, nor reasons why. I ride home on a coward's train, not knowing which friends are burning inside. I ride listening to rumors and fear, watching tense faces, eyes of hysteria, uncertain, confused. I do not hear nor dare to utter the simple truth of chickens coming home to roost.
Thank you very much, Sam. I really appreciate your poem and the explanation of your commute. Is there any other aspect of your 9/11 experience or after that that you would like to mention?
Several things. I think the first one is that, needless to say, our workplace was destroyed. And so we didn't really know what was going on in terms of whether, you know, who had been hurt or killed or any of that. I didn't. So when I got home, which would have been about, 11:30 or 12, and in a minute I'll probably read a poem about walking home that day. I went to the house, and the first thing I did was call a friend of mine who worked with me very closely, who lived relatively near the Trade Center, but a fair ways away, a safe way, distance away. And I was able to reach her. I'm amazed that I was able to get through to these phone lines on that morning. And I talked to Terry, and she said that as far as she knew, everyone had gotten out. And, you know, she told me some people she definitely knew had. So over the next few days, people got in touch by email or phone, and our personnel people established, you know, lists and sent them out so that we could communicate with each other. I have to say, I had to get myself, you know, and I maybe some others did too, a personal email system, because our email at work, which is the only email I had, had been destroyed. So several things happened that week. One was, I think Thursday of that week. Some of the local people in near where I, you know, in the area I live in New Jersey, held a rally in New Brunswick to basically say, you know, they were against any war coming out of this, and that as far as they were concerned, the Muslims in our locality were their friends, and we should all work together and all that. And I went to that and told the people at the speaker's rostrum, you know, who were organized, seemed to be organizing it, that I wanted to speak. And they said, sure. And just before me, an imam had spoken. And I, as I got to the podium, I asked him to come back and put my arm around him and said, look, we're friends. I hold nothing against you, et cetera, et cetera. And I said that, you know, I personally was against any idea of war coming out of this, and that to the extent I had talked to people from my workplace, all of us were against it. And I said, you know, luckily none of us were hurt. Some people didn't, you know, one person lost a sister out of it, and things like that. But none of our people had gotten anything more than a slightly, you know, sore ankle or something from walking down from the 16th floor to the street. And, you know, we had been very lucky in that regard. And then that next day, that Friday, we actually were able to have a organization-wide meeting at the auditorium of Beth Israel Hospital in New York, which the hospital had made available to us as a meeting place. Because some of our people had appointments at the hospital as well as at NDRI. And we were all, of course, overjoyed to see each other and to say, that we were all healthy and alive. But in general, people there also were against the war idea. And over the next few months, as wars began and stuff, and demonstrations were held against their starting, I kept running into workmates at the demonstrations, even though I would be going up to the demonstration with the people from my area of New Jersey who were against it. So that gives some idea of what happened in the immediate aftermath. Now, I said a minute ago that I would read a poem about the walk home after the train arrived back in New Brunswick. By the way, I don't know if you just heard the sirens and stuff going by. Needless to say, there's a lot of those going on in 9/11. Not that I, encountered them because I was a ways away, but people have told me about it. And we also had days of having to listen to airplanes constantly overhead as they kept scrambling fighter planes all over the area. Anyway, here's my poem, Becoming an Other, in quotation marks for other. As I walked home down the street of sun, facing an unknown number of weeks with no place to work, nowhere to which to travel every morn, I felt myself an other than those with workplaces, other than myself 2 hours before. As I heard radios preaching hate, callers in calling for extermination of Arabs in Afghanistan, saw the nation's leaders preaching jihad, bombers leaving for war, I was othered again, I and my workplaceless workmates, other. But when one went together, one knowing in our unburned flesh that burning more buildings and rupturing more bodies are never agains, not answers, not fit replies to massacre by airplane, never agains as our nation's leaders othered America by actions of war. And if you want to put up with it, I have a couple other poems I would want to read.
That's fine. No, that would be great. I've enjoyed the two that you've read so far. So have at it. Thank you.
Okay. Over the days and weeks and months after that, I was dealing with a certain level of trauma, and one of the ways I dealt with it was I just wrote a lot of poetry. And I'll read, a couple of those poems, and then I'm going to read one, which I think will interest people. So the first one I wrote, I think I drafted the first draft on October 4th, 2001, so about a month later, less than a month. It's called Little Things. It is the little things I miss, the familiar things of my workplace world, things now vanished beneath fallen rubble. Like the escalators in Path Square, some mornings my eyes race to finish a chapter as those six belted stairways trundled hundreds upwards. On some, I walked up their risers to speed myself to work. On others, I walked the stairs beside them, thighs straining to scale those last 15 feet. Like the sushi downstairs where I savored horseradish rush, the texture of sliding salmon while reading emails on AIDS or Marxism, talked workplace woes with coworkers, watched from the restaurant balcony, chefs slicing sushi and veggies below, looked down from a balcony now crushed by the offices looming above. Or like the view from room 105 on our 16th floor, gazing down at West Broadway as the sun scintillated off New York's windows or the clouds reflected off their myriad panes, perhaps fluffy and glib, perhaps gloomy with doom above the fountain below, that fountain which once squirted its smooth surface across a magic circle as luncheon singers boomed rock, a fountain now ashen in ruin, its carvings one with the walls of Pompeii. Okay, let me go to one I wrote. The timing is clear. A week after the first destruction, by Sam Friedman. Burning books sear a wound through my repose. Their embers will sear me long after the last remnants are removed from the cooling rubble, where twin incisors once chewed the lives, expectation, work time to nourish profits, where months my friends and I labored to stymie the virus, to combat AIDS. Airplanes drilled cavities in these chewing incisors, spawning rot and destruction, breeding war, empowering the vengeful, evoking agendas of hatred and greed in this, quote, land of freedom that imprisons millions, empowers the wishes of none but the wealthy, bullies the earth. A week has gone by, a week of mourning, a week of fear. Today I ride this train, staring at the nothing where twin incisors once glistened. I see global wisdom impacted, inflamed, a terrorist victory evoking vengeful bombings of terrorist replication that will chew up the helpless and guiltless of Afghanistan, spread rape and rape's infections, rot the roots of incisive thoughts, and drill cavities in communities by empowering twin viruses, HIV and humiliation's vengeance, to blight a chewed up, befuddled earth. And now, I want to read a poem which I actually wrote and began in 1998. I wrote several poems during that period about the World Trade Center. And this one, I think, is well worth reading. It's called Remember. As you marvel at the twin towers of world trade, thrusting upwards like penises or blunt instruments, remember the smashed thumbs, broken backs, electrocuted lives, shortchanged paychecks of those who erected it. As you stare at your computer screen enthralled like a cat at a window, looking out or looking inwards, remember the women whose eyes no longer focus, whose hands writhe in agony as they enter your data, whose lungs breathe poison cooking chips. As you despair at your loneliness, at the emptiness that elbows out life, and the lack of meaning even in the elbowing, remember the joys of solidarity, the creativity of shutting it all down, and salivate a Nile with your lust for revolution.
Do you have one more?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I have 60 more, probably, but I don't think it's worth reading them. I don't want to overwhelm you or whoever listens to these. And, these give some flavor of it. I mean, I wrote a lot of other poems, but they tended over time to focus more and more on the anti-war aspects and how we felt about being in a country that was doing that to Afghanistan and later to Iraq for essentially no good reason except the imperial interests and profits of the rich.
Sam, I very, very much appreciate your interview and the poetry that you've written and that you've read for us. And it will be published in the upcoming issue, to be published March 1st, I hope, if I can meet the deadline, of 2018. And I hope, I know you've been on a long trip, and I hope that you recover well from it.
I thank you for that, and I really look forward to seeing the issue and reading or hearing what other people who went through similar experiences that day have to say about it.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Goodbye.